This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Any of us who have teenagers, or are going to have teenagers at some point soon, which would be pretty much everybody, knows that at some point there's a dramatic change. One day they're walking around the house and they're happy to see you and they have all these I love you daddy and mommy pictures all over the place, and if you ask them what's going on, they'll sit and they'll talk your ear off for 5 or 10 minutes at a time. And then a day comes, they walk into the kitchen and you say, hey, what's going on? Nothing. Or they come home from school and how is school? Fine. Oh, and that is just the beginning. There's the secrets that are kept. There's having to communicate through slammed doors. There's the friends who show up that you've never even heard of. And people you may not even sure you're liking are showing up at your house and they're eating everything out of your refrigerator. There is a lot at stake when it comes to the challenge of raising adolescents and teenagers. One wrong move can send a life hurtling off in an entirely unintended direction, and one small piece of wisdom can bring it back just as fast. And in today's show, it's all about the wisdom. We're going to start with a discussion about some terrific ideas generally about how to raise adolescents and teenagers. And in our second segment, we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to every parent's heart, which is getting our kids jobs. All that's coming right up, so don't go anywhere. I'm Armin Brott, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this. From the MrDad.com radio network.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this segment is Tom Sturges, who's the author of Grow the Tree You Got and 99 Other Ideas for Raising Amazing Adolescents and Teenagers.
Tom, good morning.
Thanks for being here with us. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
So you were on the show not all that long ago with only 75 ideas at that point with Parking Lot Rules.
Yes, that was the first book, and that sort of covered my thoughts, my beliefs on raising children till about 10, 11, 12 years old. And then when my own child became an adolescent and grew into a teenager ultimately, I realized that some of the rules that I had come up with worked perfectly, but not all of them. And children, you know, teenagers and adolescents, they fight for their independence, and it's very, very important, my belief, that they become who they are meant to become as one of the first and most important goals of your parenting.
And your goal, as it was with the first book, it became a little bit more peaked, though, with this one, was to be the best possible dad you could be, and then you discovered what those of us with teenagers always discover. Why did you have kids in the first place?
Which is,
I'm not so sure why I had kids in the first place. It kind of makes you question the entire thing.
Well, I think for me, because my own father died when I was very, very young, and I never had a dad in my life, this was sort of my shot at fatherhood, whether it was approaching from the point of view of being the father or the son. This was all I was going to get. I wanted to be the best at it. And my book is basically, my books are basically my notes to myself on what worked so I could repeat it and what didn't work so I could never do it again.
Well, let's get us up to speed. The title, Grow the Tree You Got, is one of the essays from the book that people may remember the interview on Parking Lot Rules. Get us up to speed on what that one's about, and then we'll talk about some of the specific ideas that that you came up with.
Grow the Tree You Got was an essay from the first book telling the story of a coach who so wanted to get the monkey off his back of his own failed athletic adventures that he decided he was going to push his children into athletics. And one of the boy he was doing this to couldn't have cared less. If it had a ball in it, he wanted no part of it. But he was a brilliant intellectual, chess-playing, playwriting boy. And the dad missed out on the relationship with him because he was so busy trying to grow an athlete. So that essay became Grow the Tree You Got, and I used it as, because it's the central part of how I think you should do your parenting with an adolescent or teenager. It helped them figure out who they're supposed to be, help them become that person.
Do you think that there's really and truly, when it comes down to the core of the whole thing, is there a difference between being a dad of a teenager and being a dad of a younger kid? I mean, you're still going to try to get them the best they can possibly have and pay attention to them and listen to them. So what's different or what changed for you?
Is there a difference between driving a 66 Volkswagen and driving a 2010 Porsche? You know, yes, a lot of the fundamentals are the same because they're both cars and they're both going down the road. But boy, you can do so much more with one than you can do with the other. And with an adolescent or teenager, they are becoming the man or woman they are meant to be. And this is the difference. When they're younger, it's clay. They toddle along, they do what you tell them, and they trust in you and they believe in you. And you say it's Santa Claus is still here, they go with that. You get an older child, they doubt everything you say. They question everything you say. They're sure of every answer they give, even though they're often wrong.
Well,
but boy, are they certain.
You could say that about a lot of adults, too.
So what I figured out, for instance, I'll tell you, if I can tell you one of the rules.
Sure.
It's called rule number 5, forgiveness in advance. And this is a rule that I recommend you give your child as a gift. And you say, I'm putting this new rule into our life. This is rule number 5, and here's how this works. If you are ever somewhere you don't want to be, for whatever reason, and I don't care how you got there, even if you fibbed to get to that place and you didn't tell me you were going there, you call me up and say, Dad, rule number 5, I will not ask you any questions about how you got there or what happened. You are forgiven in advance. Your safety is more important than the misuse of our trust.
That's a great rule. It actually raises an interesting question. When you were coming up with these rules, the 75 there in the first book and then the 99 in this one, are you actually telling your kids that these are rules, or are these kinds of things that you suggest that you yourself and that other people kind of keep in the back of their mind?
Oh, no. This is the whole thing. I want a teenager to find my book sitting somewhere and read it and go, oh, you know what? I'd love this. Dad, will you do this for... Will you do this
okay.
to me?
Okay.
So one of my rules, for instance, is punish with kindness. And I suggest that you tell your child, you say, hey, from now on, I'm punishing with kindness. And what is that exactly? From the moment you decide there's going to be a punishment, you have to wait 20 minutes before you decide what the punishment is.
That's a very rational thing.
Late and they're, you know, they said they were going to be in by 9, and here it is, it's 9:40, and they drag in, and you go, oh, I am so upset right now, and at exactly 10 o'clock, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do about it. They have a chance to come in and supplicate and beg your forgiveness and clean up their room and tell you they're sorry, and you have a chance to cool down, and it builds a better and a closer trust between parent and child, and then you never do something really silly and mean in your punishments.
Talk about
The purpose of punishment is to change a behavior, not the person.
Talk about the idea that you've got about being completely wrong.
Oh, I love that. I'm wrong often, as are a lot of people, if they care to admit it. You get everybody to the wrong restaurant at the wrong time for reservations, or you get your child up a week early for the SATs, you know, something like that. I recommend that when you're wrong, you go in and admit it and go, you know what, I was 100% wrong about this. Your friend Susie is a wonderful girl. I'm sorry I didn't think so nicely of her when we first met. I was completely wrong. And by being completely wrong and not trying to find a shred of dignity, go, you allow your children to be completely right, and you also give them a tool for how to be completely wrong later in their lives.
What do rivers teach us about adolescence? That's the name of one of the chapters here.
This was, I was flying back from New York to Los Angeles, and staring at a window seat, and I was noticing the meandering of all these rivers that we passed over, the Missouri and the Mississippi and so forth. And I noticed that not one river was in a straight line. They made a little move to the left and then went to the right and then back to the left and then circled around. So right at that same time, my boy wanted to quit playing soccer. And I thought this was a terrible, I still think it was a mistake. I think he should have kept playing soccer because he was great at it. But like a river, he should be able to make a little mistake and make his own correction. That's how he's going to learn what a decision feels like and feel the weight and import of it. So that's what rivers teach us, that it's okay to make a little mistake and a little correction along your journey's path. Mm-hmm.
No, that's terrific. That really is. These things that I like about these rules is whether they're going to be something that's going to be an everyday part of your life or not, I mean, that certainly gives you a couple seconds to think about a little bit. It's not always going to be the 20 minutes, but I mean, you think about that. There's an interesting idea that, do we let them self-correct or do we not? So,
well, it's my thought with a book like this is, for instance, there is a rule called fathers and daughters. And let's say a spouse doesn't like the way the husband is treating their daughter. But how do you tell somebody that exactly, this essay says that however the father treats the daughter, that's what she will think love is.
Mm-hmm.
If he's rude,
yeah.
Condescending, because he's trying to toughen her up, or mean, because he's, it's a mean world out there. That'll be love to her. And you think of all the men that will be in that girl's life, her boyfriend, fiance, husband, father-in-law, her own son,
mm-hmm.
her bosses, her professors, so many men, and everyone will be a harmonic of the dad.
Tom Sturgis is the author of Grow the Tree You Got and 99 Other Ideas for Raising Amazing Adolescents and Teenagers. Tom, great to have you back again. Thanks a lot.
I so appreciate you having me back, and have a great morning.
I'm the only one in school that can tie his own shoes.
Most kids make fun of me because I still believe in the tooth fairy.
A third of the kids in my 8th grade class drink alcohol regularly.
Over 99% of my class has been offered illegal drugs.
Half of my college classmates binge drink, abuse drugs, or do both. But the frequent dinners I had with my family have helped make sure I'm not one of them.
Learn more about the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University's Family Day at CasaFamilyDay.org. Dinner makes a difference.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. First, she'll crawl. Then take her first baby steps. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school. I'll be watching her run down a soccer field. Staying up all night waiting for her to get home from her first date. Wincing when she steps on the gas pedal and then the brakes. Beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma. Or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Gather your family, friends, and co-workers and join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
There once was a boy wizard whose name was Larry Smarter.
Larry, why weren't you in Professor Dinky Doodle's mythical creature classification class?
Well, I'm taking Algebra 2 in a foreign language.
Oh, so you can talk to unicorns?
Exactly. Unless they're French.
Larry wanted to go to college, so he visited knowhowtogo.org to find the classes he really needed. Getting into college doesn't happen magically. Learn more at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this half of the show is Abby Kohut, who is the author of Absolutely Abby's 101 Job Search Secrets. She also has a website called AbsolutelyAbby.com. And Abby is quite an expert in job searching and job hunting, and particularly figuring out why it is that people aren't getting jobs. Abby, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So a lot of teens are out there trying to get jobs, and they're in a market where there's high unemployment pretty much everywhere in the country, and where they're competing with people who have college degrees, perhaps, or maybe even graduate degrees. And teenagers are trying to get a job in the summers, or maybe they're between their junior year in high school and their freshman year in college. They're young, they don't have experience. How are these people supposed to find anything out there that's going to be worthwhile?
Sure. Well, one of the things that they need to do, if they haven't already done this before, is it would be a great time to volunteer for an organization. So even if they can't get paid to work, volunteering is a great way to get experience so that when they do want to go find a job that pays money, they have some experience. If they've done some work, maybe when they were growing up, maybe even in high school, even if they don't consider it like a real job, even babysitting or anything that they've done as they were growing up, if they can explain to people why that would be considered a work opportunity, something that where they've gained experience, where they can talk about their leadership skills, where they can talk about how reliable they were when they did that, maybe they can get a reference from that person, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a great thing to try to do.
In working with the people that you work with, have you found that some younger people are a little bit more impatient than the older people, and that they aren't willing to do the volunteer work or to put in the time in something that might seem like it's beneath them in a way, although it's great for gathering experience?
I think that sometimes what happens is when people either graduate from college or from high school, they sort of feel, well, I accomplished this great thing. And it is a great thing to graduate from high school or to graduate from college. And everyone should be congratulated that does that. But at the same time, there's always going to be someone out there that is more experienced than you. So when you go out there, you kind of have to have an attitude of, I'd like to get my foot in the door. I'd like to learn. And don't focus so much on the money and the big title or anything. Just focus on, I need to learn. I need to get some great experience, which I'll be able to use to get even more great, better experience down the road.
What do you think the parents' role is here? If you've got a kid, maybe somebody who doesn't drive. I mean, so are we going to be driving them to interviews? Do you suggest that we let the kids do as much as they possibly can on their own to build up their sense of confidence? Or how much do we get involved?
Well, I guess if you can drive the kids to the interviews, that's a great idea. If you can, if there's a place where if there's public transportation in your city, certainly perhaps sending them out that way makes sense. But one of the really great things that a family can do is to help the kids learn how to network. And one of the things, I always say this when I talk to groups, is our parents teach us not to talk to strangers. And what they should say to us is, don't talk to strangers until you're looking for a job, and then talk to everybody. So the parents, it's true, the parents should be able to help the kids network with their own friends. So perhaps they can call some of their friends and say, hey, my kid needs a job. And not, can you hire them, but do you know somebody that could hire someone with this type of experience or with no experience? Because friends are a great way, they're a great network. And you already have that network, so why not ask them for a little bit of help? And the parents can teach the kids how to network, and if they're not experts at it, it might be a good thing to learn together.
Now, you have on your website a whole calendar. I mean, it's not a calendar that you look at it, but it's divided up into Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays. And that's the way that you're dividing up the job search. So you've got supersonic Mondays and rockin' Tuesdays. Talk about that pattern a little bit and how the progression works.
Sure. Well, essentially, I look at job search in a lot of different ways. The first part is that you need to search for a job. And for teens and for people that are at entry-level positions, it's important to use a lot of creativity to search. So you can search on sites like Monster and that sort of thing, but you may need to simply go in the car and just go door to door, especially as a teen. And you might want to wear a suit, for example. If you're going to work for a restaurant, maybe you want to work for a restaurant, you might not need to walk in there with a suit, but you're going to look so good if you do walk in there with a suit. They're going to be very impressed with how you look. They might just consider hiring you just based on how you look. And then we talk about resumes. And as a teen, you're not necessarily going to have the best resume out there because you don't have a lot of experience. But that's where you have to start thinking to yourself, what have I done that I might not have thought of as work, but that really could be thought of as work? And try to get something on there. And if you don't have any, like zero experience, this is where you'd want to go out and volunteer. And there's plenty of volunteer opportunities out there. And you want to volunteer in a place where you can get some great skills to put on your resume.
And how would you go about proposing something like that? That, I mean, you find an organization that you think you might like to work at and mm-hmm. propose that you volunteer, or would you be working necessarily at a charitable organization? Or how would you suggest that people find the right kind of thing?
Right. It's usually going to be a charitable organization. So there are many websites out there that you can look and you can find pretty much any charity like the United Way, Habitat for Humanity, that sort of thing. There are soup kitchens in pretty much every large city, I imagine. And just you simply would call the organization and you would just say, how would I get involved? How would I volunteer? How does that work? And they may have you come in and fill out an application. Oh, there's hospitals too. Many people want to get into healthcare. And so you can go volunteer at a hospital. It's really any organization that's a non-for-profit considers volunteers.
Okay. And are they generally pretty receptive to having a teenager come in who just may not know anything about anything?
It's going to depend on the organization. There are going to be some that are going to say yes. There are going to be some that are going to say no. But that's just like anything else. You're going to have to probably get a bunch of no's in order to get the person who's going to let you volunteer.
Right.
And you may find some organizations that are for-profit that will let you volunteer, but it's going to be fewer of those. If
right.
that does happen, it's going to be a single person, sort of like maybe an attorney or someone that works, maybe an author, for example, might hire a volunteer. But it really should be a company that's a not-for-profit.
Okay, well, that makes good sense.
Well, yeah.
In your experience in working with young people, what is one of the biggest mistakes that they make?
It really is that attitude that we spoke about at the beginning. It's that attitude of, I just graduated from college, I have a degree, I'm fantastic, and you should want to hire me. You should want to pay me lots and lots of money. And that's the mistake. And I think, again, it's totally wonderful that you graduated and that you have this degree, and you may be the most wonderful person, but the fact is that in comparison to the rest of the employed population, you really don't have a lot of experience to bring to the table. And one of the things you're going to want to talk about is how fast you learn, and you want to give examples of times when you had to learn something very quickly and you were able to do that, and that will help you. But at the same time, you want to have this attitude of, I'm so excited and I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to sweep mm-hmm. the floor if I can get a great opportunity in your company.
Now, one of the most difficult lessons to get across to my kids, who've got one in college and one who's a teenager, was that most of the job experiences that I had were, particularly as a young person, were things that I discovered after a little while. I never want to do this again. And
mm-hmm.
that kind of lesson is just as valuable as a
Completely.
Job that you really love.
Completely. And don't be afraid. Don't worry about getting the perfect job. What you want to do is get something you think that you can learn from. Get something where you're at an organization where there's growth opportunities, where you might be able to move within divisions, get something at a larger company so you can get different experiences without having to leave to get the different experiences. And then you find out along the way. We've all learned what we like, what we don't like. You're not going to know that when you get right out of college or out of high school. You're just not. You have to have those bad experiences in order to know. It's really
exactly.
unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it's true.
It really is.
My guest for today has been Abby Kohut. Her website is absolutelyabby.com, and she's the author of Absolutely Abby's 101 Job Search Secrets. She's got blogs. She's got all sorts of great resources on the website, so check that out. If you are a kid looking for a job or a parent even looking for a job, lots of stuff for adults, too. Abby, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
Sassy!
Today's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, no, a rattlesnake! Sassy, help! You will, but first you want to talk about shelter pets? The majority of pets in shelters are there due to owner-related issues like divorce or allergies?
Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brandt. We spent quite a bit of time today talking about teens, and so it seems only fitting that we should continue the discussion with an email that came in. Dear Mr. Dad, our 12-year-old refuses to do any chores. Anytime we ask him to help around the house, he always finds an excuse not to. Sometimes he even says he doesn't feel like cleaning up after himself. My husband says we should ground him. What's your take on this? I have to confess right here that the phrase, "I don't feel like it," coming from a child absolutely infuriates me. My initial reaction has always been something like, okay, no problem. I don't feel like doing your laundry or driving you to your friend's birthday party this weekend or preparing your meals or buying you that new game you want. The harsh reality for your son and every other child out there is that very few people are passionate about housework. We do it because we like living in a clean, comfortable environment. Like it or not, your son is a part of a family, and family members all chip in to do what needs to be done to keep the household moving smoothly. The adults have their responsibilities, and the kids have theirs. What exactly that means, of course, will depend on the age and ability of the kids involved. In addition to making good sense, chores, say the experts, are excellent for children because they help them develop some valuable skills and habits, including responsibility, helpfulness, appreciation for hard work, and the satisfaction that comes from making a positive impact on the lives of others. At the very least, your 12-year-old should be expected to make his bed, keep his room tidy, and clean up after himself. If you have pets, he should take part in caring for them, too. And there's no reason he can't help you bring groceries in from the car, set the table for meals, and load and unload the dishwasher. I'm sure your son isn't refusing to help out just because he's lazy or mean. Is it possible that he doesn't actually know what his duties are? Are his chores fair and age-appropriate? Have you given him so many responsibilities that he no longer has time for a social life? The first thing to do here is to have a talk with your son. Explain to him that everyone in your family pitches in and plays a role in creating a home that runs smoothly, and that is not negotiable. Next, have him help you put together a list of all the chores that need to be done on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, and roughly how long each one should take. Then, let him swap some of the chores he hates for ones that take the same amount of time, but that he'll hate a little less. He wouldn't admit it anytime soon, but he'll really appreciate the confidence you're showing in him by giving him some say in all this. Plus, having made the choices himself, it'll be harder to gripe about them later on. One more thing. Avoid the urge to micromanage his tasks or criticize his technique. For example, his dusting may not pass the white glove inspection, but as long as he puts a genuine effort into it, don't point out everything he missed. At least, not in the moment. On the contrary, if he lives up to his responsibilities, praise him and thank him for his help. We all, adults and kids alike, want to feel needed and appreciated. Finally, if he still refuses to do his fair share, go on strike. When he runs out of clean underwear or has to figure out how to take public transportation to meet up with his friends, he'll have a sudden and profound change of heart. Hey, if you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion or something you think we ought to be doing here at Positive Parenting, do let us know. You can drop us a line through our website, MrDad.com/radio.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.